what's going on with us is I'm with the National Minority AIDS Council, as you've heard, and I'll tell you, I'll let the agency speak for itself. But before that, I'm going to be talking about policies. Policy that comes from not only the White House Office of National AIDS Policy, but the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention's Division of HIV and Prevention, AIDS and Prevention. So in that branch, we are 100% funded to develop capacity building nationwide. And from that branch of CDC, we have taken sort of a directive to look at the high impact prevention. So I'll talk a little bit about what that means. And then what we've done with efforts and activities to really engage in a communication, engage our community in developing leadership nationwide and leadership to go out and be passionate about what to do next in terms of not only HIV/AIDS, but just leadership and leadership development as it pertains to people's health. And I say that because a lot of our framework for this presentation and for our programming comes from something called community leadership. And why it comes from leadership and community is because of John Gardner, who was the author of this book and this framework. And he said something that really resonated not only with the work that NMAC does, but actually our framing of programming and hopefully our communities that we serve. And what he said was, quote, he said, "I keep running into highly capable people all over this country who literally never give a thought to the well-being of their community. And I keep wondering who gave them permission to stand aside." So he said, continuing, "I'm asking you to issue a wake-up call to those people, a bugle call, right in their ear. And I want you to tell them that this nation could die of comfortable indifference to the problems that only citizens can solve." So I have nothing to disclose. Again, I'm going to look at some policies first, and that's the first is going to be the National HIV/AIDS Strategy, which is really sort of a way in which we've got our directive, the National Minority AIDS Council, and other organizations that are funded by the Division of HIV/AIDS Prevention from CDC. We've gotten our directives as to how to go to align with these goals of the strategy, then high impact prevention, and finally our programming that we developed as a result of that. So this is in keeping sort of with the learning objectives that were put forth that you hopefully came to this session to hear a little bit about, and that is, again, to get knowledge of how to implement this HIV strategy, the National HIV/AIDS Strategy, to improve your understanding of what really is high-impact prevention, and to at least get some core community leadership competencies. So first and foremost, again, as we talked about passion, we talked about community. That's something that we have been doing NMAC has been doing for over 27 years. We've been actively involved in convening, encouraging, instilling passion, and really taking action. We want people to really be passionate about the work that they've done and our country's health, not just about HIV/AIDS, but just about how the comorbidities, how we all are how all this works together, and how leaders need to step up. We need to have leaders in the community as well as in the federal and local levels. So that is something that we really found has been very important to us. And in fact, in 1986, at APHA in Las Vegas, NMAC was founded. And you'll hear a little bit more again from NMAC about that. And I do want to say that we've been involved with groups that deliver not only prevention but care and treatment for a long time. And we really were funded to raise awareness. What's going on? What is really causing our nation and many of the citizens of this country to be adversely affected by diseases, in particular HIV/AIDS, but many diseases, many comorbidities? What's going on? And why aren't people talking about it? Do they not have a voice? And if so, how can we be that voice? How can we help them? So our main mission has been and continues to be to develop leadership, leadership at the community level, but to develop leadership, particularly in communities of color. And because we are focusing on one particular disease, it's to end that disease, the epidemic levels of that disease, which is HIV and AIDS, throughout this country. So to achieve this mission, we provide education, training, technical assistance, and other capacity-building services to our more than 4,000 community-based organizations, health departments, community planning groups across the United States and its territory. So I want to take a minute to talk about the story of NMAC. And let's see if I can do this. Oops. Or have you hear from.
It was 1987. And They are providing great services, and they can help you do a better job.
NMAC has fought alongside some of the greats to adjust HIV AIDS. We've laid solid groundwork, and as we move into another round of the struggle, we look to those we serve for guidance and for strength.
Happy birthday, thank God for that, because it's just awesome.
I want to say congratulations, Tim Beck, and thank you for all that you do. It really is very important, and this has made a tremendous difference in my life. Thank you.
I love them, yeah. That's all there is to it. I would work for them, but I'll tell you, I work for them, yeah, because I think they work for us.
And that continues to be in the forefront of supporting my community, so I'm happy that we continue to be here 25 years. I'm sad that we're still here 25 years later because we're all fighting for the end of the epidemic.
We are the National Minority AIDS Council, focused and purposeful. We will end the epidemic of HIV/AIDS in America. We will continue to support. We will continue to hope. We will continue to fight to end the epidemic.
One of the reasons I included that is because one of the things that we really try to do is have be the voice or hear from people in the communities. And that was just a little snippet of the way in which we do try to hear from voices all across this country about what's going on in the community. And if they can't just share, whatever they share with us, we try to magnify and to elevate to the federal and, again, the state and local levels, to the policymakers. And so as we look and we drive down this road now in terms of policy and a lot of the changes that are affecting our country, particularly changes in healthcare, we have to think for us anyway about the national HIV/AIDS strategy. In the 1994s, there was a strategy that the Clinton administration was trying to put forth looking at HIV/AIDS, but unfortunately it did not really get the publicity and the support that this strategy had. And one of the reasons this strategy did that is because they went around the country, as our colleague had said, and held listening sessions to talk about and hear from people about what makes sense, what's going on. And in hearing from people about what's going on, they developed four main pillars that really comprise this national HIV/AIDS strategy. The first is to reduce the number of infections. Each year, there are about 50,000 people who continue to be infected for the first time with HIV/AIDS. And that's been going on for way too long, more than 10 years. So each year, that happens. And so that needs to stop. And that strategy is saying we have to do that. We really have to work together to do that. Another pillar of the strategy is to increase access to care and optimize health outcomes. Many people do not have access to care in many rural areas and even urban areas across the country. They don't have access to care. A final one is that we support is to reduce HIV health-related health disparities. And that is something that really means working together, looking at who's most adversely affected, and trying to make sure that they have the access to care and what they need. The fourth real pillar of the strategy is something that we've done through our convening sessions. That's really a federal level, to make sure the agencies work together, coordinate together, particularly in the response to HIV/AIDS. But through our efforts in working with federal and local policymakers, we try to make sure that we are at the table, not only just because we need to be at the table, but to have a voice for those who are not able to be at the table. So we want to make sure that we are coordinating efforts, we're bringing people together, and that we are at least elevating the voices and needs of people in the community. What has really happened specifically with these, with this strategy is that, notwithstanding our nation's significant achievements in caring for people with HIV/AIDS, our ability to address the domestic epidemic really, really, really depends upon individuals. It depends upon us. That's to sustaining it, to expand successful prevention strategies, and it's also really to encourage leadership, leadership at the community level. So those are the goals of the National HIV/AIDS Strategy. Again, one of the policy, one of the directives, one of the roads that we have to align ourselves with if we plan to end the epidemic in this country. So we always work with the community. We always try to elevate. We try to educate. We try to adhere. We try to build the leadership. As emergent leaders, they always come up. But once they get that information, they become even more powerful. They become even more able to speak for other people. So this is something that we really strive to do and continue to do. And as you see, one of the drivers of change for us is looking at the data. The data really has been speaking loudly to us. So far, we've talked about the strategy, and as we look at this other factor, the data, we have to realize that in terms of men who have sex with men or men who consider themselves to be gay, that's less than 5% of the United States population. And yet, if we look across the bottom tier, we can see that men who have sex with men comprise the top levels of people who are impacted with HIV/AIDS. So we look across all races, we see that that's the highest incidence of new infections. And we see that between African Americans that are 12 to 13% of the United States population, they account for a significant number of those who are impacted by the HIV/AIDS disease. We've also started to see a new trend among those who are young, that's 24 and under. And many of those are showing up, even after people have been dying for years and years and years, and in the 80s and 90s when HIV/AIDS was the number one cause of death amongst many people, particularly people of color, we thought that, you know, we could stop it and stop the deaths, but now we're seeing them rise again, and unfortunately amongst the youth. So, and youth of color, particularly young men of color. So that's another area where we want to address that, and NMAC is taking an initiative to do that through our leadership program for youth. We are also looking at some of the numbers. The top 10 states, you can see there's California, there's Florida, there's Texas, there's New York, there's Georgia, Illinois, Maryland, North Carolina, New Jersey, Pennsylvania. So those are the top 10 real states that have the highest rate of infection. But all states really have places and people that are living with, unfortunately, the HIV/AIDS disease. So we're looking at, when you really think about it, though, these top states account for 2/3 of those who have a diagnosis of HIV, at least in 2011. And regionally, we continue to look, the southern areas of the country. That accounts for the major cities all across this country where there are people who are living with the disease. So starting with the number one city that has the highest rate of infection is Miami. Then we're followed by New Orleans, Baton Rouge, Jackson, Mississippi, Washington, D.C., which includes some of the cities in the Virginia, Maryland, and West Virginia suburbs, Baltimore, Memphis, Tennessee, and Atlanta. So this leads us to really think about high-impact prevention. What should we do? That's another policy. That's another way in which we should begin to look at things. Now that we know the data, we have the sort of roadmap. We have the four pillars, you know, looking at the agencies communicating, wanting to reduce the infection rates, looking at health outcomes and ending disparities. We also know that where the targeted people are. So high-impact prevention is something, an initiative that the Division of HIV/AIDS and Prevention from CDC has really, really encouraged all of its grantees, of which NMAC is one, to incorporate. And we've done that because what we've done is we've taken it to the next level. That means looking at scalability. That means moving forward with higher programming. And what we've done with these higher programming is we've had our United States Conference on AIDS. We've talked about it to thousands of people about the need for change, about what's been going on in terms of HIV/AIDS and who's impacted by it, and targeting those who are most affected. So, the strengthening community leadership to influence change. So we have all these other policies that are going on, and we have other changes such as healthcare changing, planning group changing, administration changing. So strengthening community leadership to influence change, SLIC, is something that we felt would help our leaders, help communities, give them the strength that they need. It's a unique program that NMAC has created. It trains both the governmental community leaders and the community-based leaders to come together to know their role, how can they work together, how can they look at their styles, how can they understand how to communicate more effectively to really impact change. So the focal point really is the planning process, and each state or jurisdiction have a plan. A plan as to how to address HIV/AIDS in their jurisdiction. But that should be built together with the community and with the health department federal employees. How do they work together to develop this plan? And this plan is something that has been going on since 1994, but in 2012 they revised the way the guidance should be has been crafted so that people in the communities have a different type of role. So there's been, of course, the issues of trust and uncertainty and what does this role change mean, and so really helping people to come together to understand that organizations, businesses can't operate the same. Not if every year we have 50,000 people who remain to be infected by HIV, we cannot continue to operate the same way. So because we can't operate the same way, we have to do things differently. Change has to occur. That's the only constant, really, is change. And for leaders and for people in the community, it's uncertainty. It's transformational. It's really unclear as to what's going on and what this means. So we dug deep and we came up again with Gartner's book on community leadership, and we thought about the core leadership competencies. And their core leadership competencies look at framing ideas, building social capital, and mobilizing resources. So when we think about that, we really think about the ideas. What does this mean? This means the new ways in which people are doing business. This means helping them to understand the value, the importance, to shape things that are coming up that they hadn't seen before, and helping them to grab hold of that energy that's out there when you have a new idea. Building social capital. Well, building social capital means going out to their networks, explaining things to the networks, communicating effectively with their networks. It also means to establishing bridges, maybe where there hadn't been trust before, to really seeing where there can be trust and moving forward. And finally, mobilizing resources in the community, and not just funding resources, but people resources, and moving forward with strategic planning and planned events and outcomes that are targeted. So we have different components in the program. And the program really is something that is I'd love to talk to you more about. As you can see, it has group and individual level coaching to really support what individuals go through on a day-to-day basis. And hopefully during the question and answer period, I can talk to you a little bit more, not only about the program, but the findings that have happened at the end, how we've reached some successes, and how people have really shown that they have the confidence now to engage the community, and how they really appreciate and are satisfied with the work of the program. So in sum, we continue to build community leaders. We hope to continue to address the core competencies, framing ideas, building social capital, mobilizing resources to continue our focus on community advancement and leadership strategy. So our next move, and we encourage you to engage stakeholders, transformational change and leadership happens, and build a social capital. We also are encouraging mobilizing resources, framing ideas, because that's what it's all about as we move down this highway of change in healthcare. Thank you. So we were funded 100% to work with those who are having prevention programs or having programs working on HIV and AIDS, but the core competencies really are across the board. It's really organizational infrastructure development, leadership development, helping to understand how to motivate, to mobilize, to take your ideas and harness the energy, and to move forward in any realm.
Oh, okay. Well, I was just wanting to know the name of the book, and the author.
Yes, John Gartner. And it's G-A-R-D-N-E-R. I'll confirm that when I sit down. But community leadership. Because community leadership is different than business leadership and other types of leadership.
Why don't you expand on that for just a minute?
Yeah. Community leadership. How is it different? Yes, community, you have maybe political leaders. You have business leaders, but community leaders are very different because they are really speaking for and on behalf of individuals in the community. They really are to lead and to be there with the community, to walk the walk with the community, to encourage and to support and sustain the efforts in the community. Some people, politicians, they come and go. Business leaders have a bottom line that doesn't necessarily really reflect the communities that they service. It's more the stakeholders that, you know, and the shareholders that are their shareholders and their corporate sponsors normally for businesses. But for community, it is the people and their efforts and energy that should be sustained.
The community leaders. Thank you so much.